And Ties of Betrayal podcast is launching its new interview series with influencers called Dare to Become. I'm your host, Evgenia, and I'm here today with our first episode. We promised you deep conversations. This interview is a premiere, and we look forward to raising, brainstorming, and discussing some pretty thought-provoking things. We're here to explore how to embrace the inevitable, speaking with ordinary people, doing totally extraordinary things. Our guest today is Roxana Stantiu. She's a transformational coach, therapist, certified clinical hypnotherapist. Roxana is the member of the Global Network for Transformational Practitioners and an active volunteer supporting the global charitable campaign launched by the network in response to the pandemic. There are various dimensions of transformational work that range from a single person and enterprise for an industry to the sectors of economy and truly global and cross-cutting change. The Global Network brings together transformational practitioners from all over the world. These ordinary people are doing extraordinary things routinely, every day tackling the individual dimension, helping people and changing this world to make it a better place, one person at a time. The global charitable campaign launched by the network became truly global in just 8 weeks, and its ultimate goal is to reach as many people as possible and equip them with a trusted and powerful tool, integrative immunity meditation, that is now available in 19 different languages. It was created based on the recognized leading therapeutic methods to help the world on the individual level to go through this turbulent times of change, to embrace the inevitable, and to evolve together. Roxana joined Global Charitable Campaign shortly after it has been launched and became its most active and proactive ambassador in the European Union and beyond. She brought a lot of therapists on board to volunteer for the campaign and contributed two language versions of the Integrative Immunity Meditation for a global giveaway in Romanian for her homeland community and in French she's proficient in. Roxana lives and works in France, in the Bordeaux area, running her multilingual practice to help people with trauma, helping them refresh their lives and get rid of the lifelong emotional pain, fears, and anxieties without medications or years in therapy. Hi, Roxana. Welcome to this virtual interview studio, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Evgenia. Thank you for inviting me.
Global Network for Transformational Practitioners brings together specialists from all over the world offering transformational solutions to their clients through different modalities. But we all are certified hypnotherapists and RTT practitioners. The spectrum of our specialties is pretty wide, ranging from business executive coaching, women empowerment, entire self-sabotage, relationships, kids, teenagers, to the heavyweight issues like trauma, anxiety, depression, and suicide. Tell us about your practice. What is that that you do and who do you work with?
Well, if I had to put it in a nutshell, I would say I help people who want to change their mind. I know it's a play upon words, but I couldn't resist it. On a more serious note, and not in a nutshell, I would add that I help people change when staying as they are hurts so much that they feel there's a wound inside them. And indeed there is. I work with men and women who have accomplished things, who outwardly appear confident, but who secretly want their inner turmoil and self-doubt to stop they got used to hiding pain so well. And the makeup is so elaborate that they spent most of their lives concealing pain till it gets unbearable, till it gets to a point when it's either them or the pain. And then they ask for help. Now, this pain goes back to two basic needs we're all born with. Our need for connection and our need for authenticity. And what I mean by authenticity is individuality. It's being who I am, being in touch with my emotions and expressing them in order to voice my own self. For a baby, connection means belonging. It means safety, and it ultimately means life. And it comes first in our early life. But the need to express one's emotions, to express likes and dislikes, is also very strong because it is innate. Only that if the child is not encouraged and supported while expressing emotions, or if he's told he's wrong, the first step is that he becomes very careful with what he expresses, and then he represses his authenticity. Why? Because the main caregivers don't see it as appropriate or adequate. All the people that come to me tell me in more or less the same words, I want to be able to enjoy life. Whether they speak Romanian or French or English, they all want the same thing, to be free, to enjoy who they really are. And it all goes back to our formative years, which are our most vulnerable ones, because we learn what we live. The good, the bad, and the ugly, as a classic movie title goes.
If you remember, in one of our first video explainers we released within the framework of the Global Charitable Campaign in support to our multilingual integrative immunity meditation, we said that there is a story behind any transformation. There is a story behind any person, any human being. Anybody I know in transformational profession comes from the story of personal overcoming. Overcoming a life-threatening medical condition, physical or emotional trauma, loss of a loved one or relationships, or any form of rebirth from breaking a pattern of getting into dysfunctional and abusive relationships to tremendous professional shifts, cognitive breakthrough experiences, and serious lifestyle changes. And any transformational story I hear from a client or a colleague always boils down to the same thing. I wish I knew that before. What is your story that brought you to the path of a therapist, specifically in such a sensitive specialty like trauma?
Trauma is a big word if it's mentioned outside an emergency room or a therapist's office. And I would first like to explain what it refers to, because I specialize in emotional and psychological childhood trauma. And this can, but does not necessarily include violence or abuse or neglect towards a child. There is trauma with a small t. For instance, a child that is constantly put down by a loving but very strict parent. A child whose desires and wishes haven't been heard in the house, because as long as you live in my house, you follow my rules. Or a child who grows up with his mother usually confiding in the child about the wrongdoings of an absent father, let's say, or a child who's looking after his siblings because parents are not available. Yeah? These are all instances in which a child is asked to play a role he can never play. The role of an adult. And then there is trauma with a big T. And that can be anything from neglect, violence, or abuse of any kind during childhood. And here we talk about intergenerational trauma in almost all the cases I have dealt with, whether it's Romania or France. We talk about generations of families in which some form of violence towards children is not only accepted, but expected. I had a client, a businesswoman with an impressive track record in entrepreneurship. And the familiar scene she grew up with was when she was coming back from school, telling her parents that she had been slapped by the teacher in class because she was quite a naughty child. And the parents' reaction was always, well, you must have done something wrong. You were asking about my personal story behind being a therapist, and particularly a therapist working with trauma. Well, my journey was not straightforward, and it didn't cut too many corners. I wish it did, but it didn't. I always wanted to be a doctor, not any kind of doctor. I wanted to be an ER surgeon. For me, helping people out of a critical situation in the soonest possible time always felt so miraculous and so daring, but at the same time so very possible. Now, unfortunately, fast forward to my high school years, my accomplishments in physics did not amount to what I needed to even think of medical school. So I had to give up that dream for a long while. But my life as a child, as it turned out, did offer me a connection to the medical world, and it was to take place the hard way. My mom was suffering from depression and many associated conditions and addictions. And the way her illness unfortunately evolved during my early years and later on, till I lost her, greatly influenced my take on life and the way I looked at health in general and mental health in particular. I was quite small, and there was a feeling of silent helplessness and despair around the house because she was not well and pills were not working. And I will always remember the medical prescriptions her neurologist gave her. A renowned doctor in my country back in the 80s. It was a long list of usually 6 or 7 different heavy antidepressant, anti-anxiety meds, sleeping pills. And I was wondering, well, how come she's been taking these for years and years? And she only gets worse and worse. And I remember slowly building in myself a sort of determination not only to help her heal, but to actually heal her. And this became my life mission. But of course, things were always too complex and too complicated for a child. And the more desperate my wish and my search were, the more helpless I became. So I learned helplessness and hopelessness. And this became a life pattern because I had to save someone in order to feel accomplished and validated. And this pattern influenced the way I bonded to people and the way I developed close relationships with adults. It was in the 90s, and I remember I was talking to a doctor. She was a head of a major department in a psychiatry hospital in Bucharest, and she was telling to me about therapy, and that was a big eye-opener to me. She said it was long, it was a complicated process, it could take years, but it might be successful. And I was beyond frustrated because my mom was running out of time, as she was running out of sanity, in fact. And there was this huge gap in my understanding between a surgeon's ability to save a person's life in a matter of hours and a mental health worker's ability for a quick and meaningful intervention in the life and the mind of a person. Well, my interest in psychology and the mind started quite early, but my real focus on it happened in the last 15 to 20 years. And that was long after I had lost my mom, after different life crises of various sorts, after I had gone into therapy myself in order to be able to help others, but not myself primarily, till I finally realized that I was living, reliving, and operating in a negative pattern in which I could never ever win. And with all the pain and the suffering that this pattern caused in my life and in the life of others, of those dear to me, I finally came to understand the deep meaning of the words you hear on a plane. In the event of a decompression, oxygen masks will drop automatically. If you're traveling with a child or someone who requires assistance, secure your mask on first and then assist the other person. Now, in an airplane, this sentence has a direct meaning. But in life, the metaphor says it all. Save yourself. Then and only then you can save others. Because unless you come from a solid place of self-trust and self-love, rock solid, you cannot truly teach others true self-love. So all these years of self-work and introspection, and then later on of study, all the important persons in my life, my children who have taught me so much, all the therapists I've worked with as a client, and then all the brilliant minds I've learned from helped me become the therapist I am today. It was a cumulative process. I went through therapy myself, looking for answers, and to me, Carl Jung is the king, because he practically took a deep dive and opened the gates of the subconscious for all the manifold therapies we can find today, and then some. And later on, the use of hypnotherapy to access the subconscious followed naturally. And Milton Erickson shaped modern hypnotherapy, and that was a huge contribution. But for me, the missing piece of the puzzle was rapid transformational therapy, because it was like coming into a dream. All my life, I had been looking for a therapy that could help people the way surgery does. fast, efficient, and permanent. Therapy doesn't have to take years. We have lives to live, we have places to go, we have kids to play with. In as much as I love my work and I want to spend the rest of my life doing it, I don't want my clients to spend years in therapy. That's why I called my practice Refresh Your Life. I usually work with a client between 1 month and 4 months. So, yes, I wish I knew then, when my mom was still here, what I now know. It could have saved her.
I believe now is the right time to ask you to share more about yourself. I know that you are a mother of three wonderful kids, a wife, and an active member of your community. I know also that you are acting and directing plays as a member of an English theater group in France. We look forward to getting to know you more.
Well, I'm also a grandmother of twin girls. You didn't know that. My three kids are larger than life. And life is definitely larger and funnier and more lovable having them. All three of them were born in different millennia, in different centuries, and in different generations. Because Vlad and Andrei are millennials, they are 35 and 36. And Sonia is 18, so she's Generation Z. Makes me feel very wise. I also feel very blessed, and I'm very proud of our relationship. As to my theater activity, this is a passion for me, and it started a long time ago. I was in Romania, and I took part in several theater projects, and I enjoyed every minute of it. And then I gathered a group of kids, among which were two of my own kids, and I produced my own version of The Wizard of Oz, in which I played Mary Poppins, who was looking after a group of kids, and in order to keep them occupied appropriately, she helped them stage The Wizard of Oz. And then I moved to France, and I thought all this had to end. But quite unexpectedly, as there are lots of English people here, there is also an Andra. So I joined it, and I joined it as the only non-English member. And since then, I've been in many shows, and I staged a lot of our productions. And theater has enriched my life, and it brought me so many wonderful memories and new friends. So I can only quote Forrest Gump on this. Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
You are a first-generation immigrant, and that is the story I could totally relate to myself. And it's a huge portion of my clients. I work with people in transition. And moving to another country is a pretty challenging time on anybody's path. It is a journey of personal growth and evolution in itself. Crossing that kind of a bridge takes a lot of courage. It took me time, sweat, and pain to create my rules of success as a first-generation immigrant. I follow and teach. Embrace the inevitable, never betray yourself to fit in, and bet on yourself. What are yours?
I am probably not the typical immigrant. Now, to give you a personal timeline, I left Romania when I was almost 50. And for a more objective point of reference, that was the last world crisis, 2009. And leaving Romania was by far the most difficult decision of my life, because I left as I wanted to offer my youngest child better schooling, but my other two children stayed in Romania as they had just finished their studies and they had started working. Now I have to tread carefully around this topic because I want my message to come out absolutely clear and truthful to my own self. And that's why I told you that I might not be the typical immigrant. I never felt I organically belonged to one place or another, to a space or a country. And had you asked me 30 years ago where I felt I belonged to, I would have said I was truly a nomad at heart, because I would have said that home for me was wherever I decided to settle down with my children. In retrospect, I know that mothers and nomads don't go together very well. In fact, they're quite incongruent. Mothers want to settle down while nomads love to get up and go. Now, with years and everything they've brought along, I can definitely refine my message by saying that my roots are in me and the people I love. And this definitely transgresses time and space. I feel home with my three children, with the men I love, with my closest friends. And this is not bound by space or time. What I've realized during this very intense past years is that home starts with me, within me. And it was always like that. Only it took me longer to realize what it really is. Well, I've always loved building homes and nests, and I take great pride in that. I love building familiarity and comfort to myself and my loved ones, and this is an absolute core value for me. My children are not living with me at the moment. In fact, two of them are 3,000 kilometers to the east, and one of them is 1,000 kilometers to the north. But they always know they have a home with me, physically and virtually, wherever I am. And this is exactly what I do with my clients. I help them rediscover and truly love their own selves. I help them get rid of the negative conditioning, the critical self-talk and self-blame or shame or guilt. And I hold the space for them so that they allow themselves to become familiar with their deepest wishes and desires. And the moment you see this happening in a person is so unique and so profound and so sacred. So that is my immigration story. My whole life up to now, I have migrated into my heart. And now I guide others to do that too. And the satisfaction of achieving that is beyond words, no matter how much I love words.
The world is going through its major shift. COVID is here forever. We are in the new reality. Masks, distancing, international travel ban. It's not an easy time for the world. And the situation became a catalyst. It showed that each of us must take good care of oneself for all of us to continue and thrive as a humanity. What can we do on the individual level? We humans are the cells in the body of humanity, and this is the time when humanity needs each of us to take good care of ourselves for the sake of health and well-being of humanity. The answer is, of course, immunity, and I mean natural, strong, and resilient immune system on all levels, mental, emotional, physical, energetic, if you will. What is your outlook on our life going forward?
Several days ago, I saw an article in the last July issue of the Scientific American Review, and the title was "The Biggest Psychological Experiment is Running Now," referring to this lockdown. So at one point, roughly one third of the world's population was under strict orders to stay home. In terms of figures, the article detailed, that is 2.6 billion people, more than the world population during World War II. Definitely, this crisis is unprecedented, and it has an open-ended frame. Luckily, in my opinion, in all human history, we have never had the resources available now to deal with it, to study it, and to find ways to prevent it in the future. One of the resources we have is the science of resilience, which investigates how people react to adversity, and this science is already offering some clues. Now, another powerful resource is both the science of virology and the science of mental health. Yes, this is a pandemic, and it has taken us all by surprise. That's what crises usually do, don't they? But I think that we've never been better armed to deal with this than we are now. There are hundreds of labs and research institutes working on this against the clock. Now, from the point of view of mental health, there is a similar huge effort in which behavioral scientists are gathering data and they are measuring the psychological toll in real time in order to find ways for people to cope better. But on a very personal level, I think that our strongest and closest resource is our own immune system. We are not defenseless. Our immune system is our protection shield. Let's not forget that. We are not lost in space. In fact, it's quite the contrary. We have a system that is designed and built in order to support and protect us. So why don't we help it instead of hindering it? This is its number one job. I think we have to fully recognize and strengthen our immune system because it's our closest ally. I love the medical profession and I would have loved to be a doctor, as I told you before. But I think it's high time to give credit to medicine in a wider, more holistic, more encompassing sense of the word. There is a larger toolbox we have access to. We don't only have pills and surgery. We have nutrients, we have genetics, we have metabolic processes that are being studied now. We have different therapies. We have scientists and researchers doing pioneer work. We have nutritionists and we have herbalists. And they're all pointing into one direction. Mind and body should be considered together. The way we think and express emotions are directly connected to the way we feel and the way we develop diseases or illnesses. Healthy food was medicine long before medicine and pills were invented. Sleep was medicine long before synthetic melatonin was invented. I love modern medicine and the outstanding progress of emergency surgery during the past 50 years is breathtaking. Operating theaters and emergency units look like spaceships today, and they are saving lives one after the other. Likewise, the discovery of antibiotics and vaccines have saved millions of lives that would have otherwise been lost to polio, to tuberculosis, to bacterial infection. But there is a huge mass of human health that the people are largely unaware of. There are more healing solutions out there once we just broaden our horizons. When it comes to emergencies, there is nothing better than modern medicine and surgery for physical trauma. Thank God we live in this era. I myself would have been dead at least 3 times. But let's put things into perspective. The emergency surgery for trauma and accidents only accounts for maximum 10% of the medical care worldwide. The rest of it, a whopping 90%, is made up of chronic diseases that develop in years, over long periods of time, that are closely connected to lifestyle, to life choices, and the environment. Now, it's already yesterday's news, the fact that stress has been the major buzzword in health during the 20th century. And it's similarly accepted that chronic stress is at the core of all major illnesses that trouble modern society. Chronic stress is related to high blood pressure, heart diseases, diabetes, irritable bowel syndrome, cancer, autoimmune diseases. Now, it's been proven that a period of about 20 minutes of intense acute stress can and does block the immune system for at least 3 hours. And this is just a snippet of chronic stress. I'll give you an example of what chronic stress can do on the long run. I had a client, a wonderful young woman entrepreneur with a nice family, 2 small kids. And before we started working, she told me, "Well, I don't think I can be hypnotized because I can't close my eyes during the day unless I blink, of course. I don't close my eyes because who knows what might happen." Her level of anxiety and fear were so high, she was on alert mode always. And she had the most elaborate, vicious circle of anxiety I have ever seen. She had perfected it during years in childhood, while she, her mother, and her brother had to be on their toes, ready to go, ready to flee the house always for fear of a violent father. I've worked with her during this pandemic for a month and a half. And in the end, she told me, "I never knew I was so powerful. I should have done this long time ago. I tormented myself for such a long time." And she was so luminous, and she was just starting to enjoy life.
We call this interview series Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Things. While we speak with influencers. And the reason why we do that is because we believe that this is another pandemic our society is suffering from. We all want to be extraordinary on the surface. We both know that one of the most widespread viruses in our society is feeling not enough. We are raised with that notion of not being good enough, strong enough, smart enough, capable enough, privileged enough, fortunate enough to make it there. Now, this virtual destination is pushed beyond our cognitive horizons, and we are too busy chasing our image. We work so hard projecting to impress other people that we forget to be. We are too busy doing things, getting stuff that should perceivably make us happy, at peace, and in harmony. And my humble observation is that only those who stop this marathon, stop chasing the personal brand of an extraordinary person, and start accepting the self as ordinary and embrace it, actually end up doing the most extraordinary things, making the greatest contributions and impacting the world is in the most profound and transformative way. So the formula, do in order to have, and then you will be, seems to be flipped over, like the reflection in the mirror. What do you think about that? What trends do you observe in your practice?
This feeling of not being enough and this chase for the external image are closely correlated. And of course, modern society and economics have played a part in that. I'm not referring to this because I'm neither a sociologist nor an economist. But as a therapist, what I see in my practice is the following thing. Irrespective of the way in which this "I'm not enough" feeling is expressed, whether it's anxiety or lack of self-confidence or any form of addiction or depression, it all boils down to two major educational errors. The first one is authoritative parenting, and the second one is destructive competition. The vast majority of my clients' background go back to authoritative parenting. Physical violence is not a must, just strict, severe parenting. A child has no choice when he's told, "You have to obey mom because you don't want to upset her." And it all boils down to how parents regulate their emotions. Because a child learns to deal with his own emotions from parents. And this should, in my opinion, be the major educational goal for a parent in the first years of his child's life. If you want to raise emotionally strong and stable kids, a child's tantrum is an expression of emotions. If the parent reacts with anger and fury, diminishing the child, then this is the lesson. He responds to anger with anger, to fury with fury. This is how the world works. And the second lesson for the child is, do not express what you dislike. I would advise every parent to watch themselves whenever the young child expresses anger or fury and to answer the following question: what does this trigger in me? Because whatever this is, that is what they have to solve so that they don't pass it over to the child. I was talking earlier about intergenerational trauma, and this is what I see in my practice. Young mothers coming to me saying, I don't want to pass this on to my child. I want this pattern to stop. The second main educational error is competition against others. A child whose school results have always been compared against those of a neighbor or of a sibling, never against his own previous results. And this leads to fierce expressions of highly competitive adults later on. A child might not follow his dream because he's afraid of exams. Or kids that go into a depression because they have come second in class. This is a huge and unjust battle in which a child can never win. And it's a losing game. I think that one of the greatest gifts that we can give our children is to teach them to compare against an earlier version of their own. Because this is the proper way to measure growth and progress. When you teach your 3-year-old girl to appreciate that today her drawing was better than the last one, instead of comparing her against friends or against your own ideas about art or Picasso. I was born into such a culture. Fortunately, my parents were not like that, but I recognized the pattern immediately.
We as a humanity are going through crisis. That's a fact. The intensity varies from location to location, and as situation unfolds, it reveals more and more pain points that were hidden and silent for the most part during our life before the pandemic. It is a historical moment, and we are already in the place where we can see before and after. So how do we embrace the inevitable? How do we become our own reliable and caring partners, allies, supporters, cheerleaders, loving parents, and best friends? We intimately know how to be our own harshest judges and punishers. Now, how do we grow into our own leaders and influencers to evolve together with the changing world?
Somehow the world came to a standstill. We were all locked in our homes. Everything on the outside went silent. So we could hear not only the noise in our heads, but also the turmoil in our soul. So this standstill was, for all of us, an exercise in balance. And whenever a sudden and major life crisis turns up, whatever has hurt us so far and hasn't been resolved comes up to the surface. What I have seen was that absolutely every person I've worked with during this pandemic so far have definitely let go of a lot of pain and fear. They have been through extraordinary life challenges, and they have realized that forgiving themselves for the past was absolutely essential. And the effects of the process are outstanding and empowering. I read somewhere that forgiveness is when you stop hoping that the past could have been any different. And this is the time when you stop the past from affecting your present. This is when healing begins. Because it's from now on that you can recognize and use and develop strong coping skills.
Nothing can be changed until it's faced and understood. In our practices, we help our clients to get to the root cause of the issues that seem to be holding them back. and sometimes destroying lives and manifesting on the physical level. What we always find is how outdated and irrelevant our core beliefs, meanings, and self-perceptions are. But because they are beliefs, they become a closed system, living the life of its own. And as a result, we cannot access them on the conscious level and let go. We can't forgive our hurters and, most importantly, ourselves and move on. It's like our digestive system. We can't be healthy and our immune system is weak and malfunctioning when we are not absorbing what's necessary and good for our body and don't eliminate what's no longer serving it. The same works on the mental and emotional level. We cannot grow and progress if we don't eliminate. Our meditation is structured around the holistic and integrative approach to the immune system. What is your outlook on that?
Firstly, I would like to talk about meditation in general and recognize its true value, because meditation is not only for Buddhist monks or hermits living in caves. I'm quite amused when I hear someone saying, "Oh, I'm too busy for this New Age nonsense," or "What do you mean, think of nothing?" I used to think like that, and I used to say, "Oh my God, this is an exercise in boredom." And it's so different from that. And what I realized after I started meditating is that it's an exercise in relaxed awareness. It helped me find my inner rhythm and stay in it. It sharpened my focus and it helped my observation skills. And who doesn't need that? And last but not least, meditation is so worldwidely recognized and used as a tool to relax that nobody can now deny its value. It teaches us to retroflect. And this is the wonderful capacity we all have to turn our attention inside and switch on that wonderful part of our nervous system that is responsible for resting, digesting, relaxing, and healing. Now, for these past 20 years of this new and bright 21st century, I have seen a general trend for a change at a very deep level. We hear words like deep connection or greater awareness or holistic approach being mentioned in business environments or academic circles, places you would have never heard them being mentioned before. Mindfulness is, as a concept and practice, is taught in companies throughout the world. Principles of yoga are being taught to first-year medical students in Harvard. Only during the past year, I have counted at least 15 articles in Harvard Business Review on the concept and practice of mindfulness. So there is a larger toolbox available. Thanks to the HeartMath Institute, we have learned so much about the connection between the mind and the heart. And people are surprised when they are told that the heart sends more information to the brain than the other way around. The quality of signals sent from the heart to the brain have a profound effect on the brain function because it gives us mental clarity. We are living in the golden age of understanding the human brain. Neuroscience has learned more about the human brain in the last few years than in the previous 5,000, we have discovered that the brain is capable of growth and transformation throughout our lives, and it can keep functioning at ever higher levels. It has this capacity. There is a never before felt need for fast and permanent change, because people are no longer content with seeing a therapist for years and years. And this need to connect the mind and the body is more and more felt as a real and strong trend. And in this respect, our meditation is a wonderful tool that can fully impact our well-being.
We as therapists, transformational practitioners of all sorts, and mental health professionals know from the experience, from the origin, that a lot of high achievers, from business people, celebrities, politicians, athletes, you name it, leverage hypnosis-based practices and therapists for their personal and professional growth and development. But we still, unfortunately, live in the time and the environment where hypnosis needs to be demystified, if not undemonized. I work a lot with business people that mostly come for their professional development and personal growth, specifically in business context. And typically my client comes very prepared. But even in my practice, where I don't work with health issues and clinical situations, I still receive a lot of pretty interesting questions and misconceptions. I'm sure you have your collection of stories, and I'm inviting you to take this opportunity and share the most common questions, reservations, and unreasonable concerns you come across that would be helpful for our audience to gain greater and deeper understanding of the essence and benefits of the alpha brainwave state.
Well, it might sound daring, but that's what this interview is all about, isn't it? But my highest hope is to see hypnosis and the therapy that I practice as mainstream therapy in mental health. It's now classified as alternative. To me, alternative sounds like fringe. What's alternative about something that is natural? It happens daily, only we call it daydreaming, and we sometimes use it for artistic purposes or for brainstorming, especially the kind of relaxed awareness that we teach our clients. But I'm very confident, because hypnosis has already been backed up by solid science, and it has been used by leading anesthesiologists in hospitals around the world. And I only mention hospitals in this country or in the vicinity of it. In Paris, the Marie Curie Institute performed a study of 150 cancer patients that had undergone surgery using hypnosedation as an alternative to general anesthesia. In Belgium, in a hospital in Liège, since 1992, there have been almost 2,000 surgical interventions using hypnosis. And hypnotherapy in general has demonstrated its efficacy for a number of physical conditions. It reduces pain. Dentists are using it. You were mentioning alpha brainwaves and their benefits. We know that our brain is functioning on different wavelengths, and they can be measured by an EEG machine. So during daytime, when we are awake and alert, our brain mainly operates in beta state, that is high frequency, low amplitude waves. This means the neocortex is engaged, it's very active. We are focused on the outside world. We gather information through our senses. As we quiet down, when we prepare to go to sleep or to rest and we close our eyes, we start to relax physically and mentally. So the brain moves from beta to alpha, lower frequency but higher amplitude waves. And in alpha, we are calmer, we are more comfortable, we can assess any situation more objectively. So your inner world becomes more real than the outside world. And we often go into this state when we read a book or we watch a movie or when we meditate. From beta to alpha, we cross the threshold of the analytical, rational world into the subconscious. And that's where the treasure is, because we go into the operating system where patterns, beliefs, and habits are formed. Now, in alpha, you no longer hear the voice saying, people don't change, or no, you can't do that, it's your fault. Because here, it's where you can eliminate negative patterns and self-sabotage. And it's here where the good work begins, because you can build new habits and new beliefs. And this is why hypnosis gives you more control. It doesn't take it away. You were saying we had to demystify hypnosis, and this is correct. I have had clients that have asked me the most miraculous questions, like, what if I go somewhere and I can't come back? What if I get stuck somewhere? Or shouldn't it be better for my husband to be with me and hold my hand? Or can I give my mom your phone number so she calls you in case something happens? Or, you do this online, isn't it dangerous? And all these people have told me after the session, oh, it was so revealing, so meaningful, and so liberating. I should have done that years ago. And neuroscience helped us big time, because it brought along unprecedented breakthroughs and massive shifts, and the whole field of therapy is undergoing a huge upgrade. I think this is an exciting renaissance, and I'm so happy to be part of it.
The guest of this episode of the interview series with influencers was Roxana Stantio, transformational coach, therapist, and clinical hypnotherapist. Roxana is a member of the Global Network for Transformational Practitioners and its most active ambassador in European Union. Thank you for doing extraordinary things every day and changing this world to become a better place, one person at a time. Your contribution is invaluable. Global Network for Transformational Practitioners continues its global charitable campaign initiated in response to the pandemic. Free guided meditation for your immune boost, produced and released within the framework of this global giveaway, can be accessed in 19 different languages in the first season of Anti-Self-Betrayal podcast. Unique method behind this transformational recording in your language is backed by a lot of science that will make it work for you, even if you will fall asleep in the process. It is that simple and powerful. All you need is to consistently listen. We wish you to be well, and don't forget to share with those you care about. That was Entire Self-Betrayal podcast with its new interview series with influencers, Dare to Become. I'm your host, Evgenia, and I hope you enjoyed this deep, meaningful, and insightful conversation. We were daring right in front of you, hopefully greatly. And here's what I would like to leave you with this time. The only way to embrace the inevitable is to go inwards. Find your strength, find your spirit, find your power, and keep it in your skin. Till next time.